back together again, you and I chatting it up, midweek Wednesday style, the 11th of June, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I open the show criticizing some area politicians and media outlets for insinuating that peaceful, lawful protesting in Connecticut is somehow being threatened by the Trump White House. And Sonia Mayor David Cassetti dropped by to chat about recent controversy surrounding his city's finances and a beef he has with a member of the General Assembly. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Harp talked about a push by some left-leaning Democrats against a 2026 re-election run by Governor Ned Lamont and a controversial housing bill, too. And Maria Weingarten from CT 169 Strong phoned in to talk about a news release regarding that housing bill.
The problem, boys and girls, kids, moms and dads, so far is not the military. The problem is not the military. The problem does not stem from anything, at least so far, that any man or woman wearing a National Guard uniform in L.A. or any member of the Marine Corps, a man or woman who's there. The problem is not from anybody who's there yet that is wearing those uniforms. It's not. It's just not. You cannot find one stinking, lousy, single, solitary thing anybody in the military has done in L.A. I dare you. The problem is lunatics. The problem is people that can't control themselves. The problem is the rioters, and it's not people protesting. But yet a lot of people on the Democratic side in this country and in this state will keep saying that over and over and over again to scare you while they keep saying, oh, America's getting scared. Trump is doing this, and this has been Hegseth, this and the other. You should be scared. Well, no, if you're not rioting, what do you have to be scared about? And it's not even protesting. It's the people doing damage, physical damage, setting fires, running around with Mexican flags in the United States, hooting and hollering. They're the people that are causing the problems. And this is not standard protest. It's not. Please spare me with all, you know, the protests are mostly peaceful. Again, we all need to take a collective breath and freaking relax. You know, don't doubt this. There are people on the left that want violence. They want the violence. There are people on the left of this country and in some of these cities all over the U.S. that want the violence. They are praying. They are on their hands and knees praying that some man or woman or some man or woman with a National Guard uniform on or a Marine uniform on uses their weapon. That's what they want. That's not, I'm sure, what any member of the Guard wants. I'm sure that's not what any member of the proud U.S. Marine Corps wants. But the insurgents, the troublemakers, the Antifa crowd, the rabble-rousers, they are praying that one person or maybe a few wearing a Marine uniform or wearing a National Guard uniform overreacts. Because you know what their nightmare really is? Their nightmare is if these Marines and these fine members of the National Guard execute their orders perfectly and nobody gets hurt. But I'm reading here, look, I'm looking up at the screen right now in my studio. Protests against ICE raids continue. It's not, they're not, the pushback is not against the Guard per se, or the Marines per se, it's against immigration reform, which Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, whether you love him or hate him, is doing exactly what he said he was going to do. But this notion, this worry that the U.S. is turning into a war zone, at least up to now, is bullcrap. I wish I could use the other word, but I can't. It would be a flurry of emails, and they might make me take a few days off. And it would never get on the air because we have an electronic device that would prevent that. But my God, everybody, I'm telling you, and you know I use this phrase all the time. People laugh at me on it. I have people sending me emails and messages saying, you know, you use that little flippantly. No, I don't. Calm down. Calm down. U.S. officials say there are 700 Marines on standby outside of Los Angeles. Well, here's an idea. If you're among those that doesn't want the Marine Corps to see any action in L.A., go home. Stop protesting. Stop setting cars on fire. Stop vandalizing sneaker stores and the Apple store. Yeah, because I'm sure that helps immigration. Stealing iPhones. Yeah. Most of which you probably won't be able to use because Apple will shut them off. But you people are too damn stupid to understand it. But yeah, that's great. That helps the cause of immigrants seeking a better way in this country by you stealing shoes. Yeah, why don't we just do that? Why don't we burn cars? Because that makes all type of sense. Look, I shouldn't even have to say this, and I know deep inside you're agreeing with me. This is nuts. This is nuts. The fact that this is even a thing. The fact that you have people protesting the federal government, doing what the federal government is supposed to do because they have mindless, incompetent governors and mindless, incompetent mayors in a lot of these blue-leaning or left-leaning states, cities, and towns. I'm sorry if you don't want to hear that, but that's the truth. And if this was all, it was just a matter of time before this happened. It is mind-numbing, the mindless garbage we're hearing from people, at least up to now. Now, if things take a turn south, I'll sit here and say, well, okay, you were right. But this is, and the people in the media, look, I'm looking at two sources today. Hartford Current, Connecticut officials troubled the military is being deployed against U.S. citizens. No, the military has not been deployed against anybody. They're standing around protecting federal buildings. Good Christ. Connecticut officials denounce Trump defending the right to protest. Who's saying you can't protest? Who's saying you can't protest? It's a simple question. Where have you seen anybody saying we're not going to allow protesting? Where have you seen that? And please, don't call me with the, well, you know, Paul. No, I don't know. Tell me. Connecticut officials denounce Trump. Okay, they denounce Trump. That's fine. That's their right. They defend the right to protest. So please, give me a call right now. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Before we descend into madness here, which the left would love. Who in Connecticut, you tell me, here's my question to start off, and this is kind of rhetorical, who in the state of Connecticut is suddenly going out there and saying, you can't protest? Really? This is where we are now? Ginning up fair like this? Come on. I have an idea. You want the National Guard to go home? You want the Marines to go home? Everybody put down their Molotov cocktails, follow along, put down their rocks, stop setting cars on fire, and go home. And by the way, I'm seeing the protesters again on the screen here at, let's see, it's 10:45 L.A. time. Don't any of these people have jobs? I'm telling you, the left in this country, and I mean this sincerely, I'm not saying this for effect. I never say anything for effect on these shows. I've had bosses in the past, not here at Connoisseur, but say, hey, why don't you say this or that to get the phones? I say, no, because I don't believe that. This I believe. Right now, the material left in this country and in California, they are beside themselves that the Marines and the National Guard aren't shooting at people. They want Kent State. I'm sorry if you don't think so. I do. Remember, the power to end all this and in all street violence always stands with those protesting. It simply does. Do you know how dumbfounded the Marines and the National Guard would be if all these protesters suddenly put whatever round of Molotov cocktails they were doing down, stomped them out, took off their masks, dropped all their rocks, put on belts to pull up their pants? Jesus, how do these guys run with the saggy pants? I don't get it. And wave to the National Guard and say, okay, we made our point. You guys and gals take care. Go home. Nothing would happen. Nothing would happen. But not here in Connecticut. Oh, there's some areas in this state they should send the guard to. Connecticut officials denounced Trump, defend the right to protest. This is, and of course, this is William Tong. Again, one of the most sensible things we heard yesterday was actually from Governor Lamont, which is why his party hates him. Well, Governor Lamont said, hey, if you don't engage in violence, you're pretty much okay. But no, this is not what the left's message is here. This is mind-numbing. This is mind-numbing on so many levels. The stupidity. Now, look, you can hate Trump for his immigration stance. I'm not saying you can't. But if you throw rocks and burn crap for enough days, even an incompetent guy like Gavin Newsom and an incompetent mayor like Bass, who, by the way, look at her background, she was really into the Fidel Castro crowd at one time. And if you don't believe me, look it up. Even they have to do something. It's mind-numbing. Maybe I think we are a Petri dish experiment here, and there are aliens looking down at in their microscopes going, Jesus, what did we do? Mike in Fairfield starts us off. Mike, how are you?
Hey, Paul. I agree with you. Just total craziness.
Oh. Go home. All these people, go home, and that solves your problem.
Well, I just lost my whole train of thought, Paul. Jeez.
Hey, you're all right, Mike. Don't worry, because don't worry. The train wasn't stopping at our station. It's a crazy train.
I got it, Paul. Tong and Lamont. If this thing starts up, you know, we're supposed to have this major across the country on Saturday.
Yeah, thing. No King's Day or something. Yeah,
King's Day. Yeah. I want to see a shove off in downtown Greenwich and see how fast the National Guard gets there.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. I can't tell you how many people on social media, my private channels, and even people I'm kidding around with, you know, say, yeah, bring the guard to Connecticut. Oh, my God. But the bottom line is they're not going to do anything against provoke. So don't provoke them. Don't provoke him. Oh, and by the way, later on this hour, next hour, there were a couple of stories out there. One about ICE raiding a school graduation. Another one further into the detainment of that CNN correspondent. It wasn't long before both of those things were explained yesterday. But they didn't fit the narrative. Bob in Weston. Hello, Bob. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Good, Bob.
Good, good. Boy, California's what an embarrassment. We look like a third world country out
there. Just go home. All those people go. Don't they have jobs, Bob? What are they doing?
Paul, the rocks they're throwing at these poor officers.
Cops.
You know, in the cars, they're smashing through windshields.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a disgrace. I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Is Gavin Newsom Nancy Pelosi's nephew?
Why would you ask that?
Well, if the guy has his head in the sand over the homeless, he's really proven himself. I mean, it's a disgrace out there. Even the Democrats are going crazy over it.
Yeah.
And to let him, that he even thinks that he can control the rioting and everything that's going on now, he should be going to President Trump, working arm in arm with him to get this under control.
It is.
It's an absolute disgrace. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, President Obama and President Clinton, I believe you would have the figures.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they deport more people?
Yeah, they did. They did. And Bob, thank you. Appreciate the call. But the point is people don't like what they call theatrics of the way Mr. Trump is doing it. But yes, in fact, there are a lot of progressives I talked to who did not like Bob, you're correct, Mr. Obama, for doing that. Now, the point here is, did those, I think Barack Obama, I think he deported 3.5 or 4 million people. Now, did all those people get what is termed due process? Maybe they did. I don't know. But here's the bottom line in this. And Tony and Tim, hang on. We'll be with you after news. We're just packed here time-wise. Here's the bottom line. You cannot interfere with a federal person, an ICE agent, doing their job. You can't do that. If you don't like what they're doing, well, I get a too bad. Too bad. This is what the guy was elected. I told you people a year and a half, 2 years ago, if he wins, it's on immigration, and that's exactly what has happened. You may have been reading in spots across the sphere online, Hearst Connecticut Media, great story done by my dear friends at the Inside Investigator, that late in the budget process last week at the Capitol, there was a parliamentary move made to push some narrowly tailored language that would place the city of Ansonia under what's called Tier 1 state oversight by the Municipal Finance Accountability Commission, MFAC. It's a body that exists in Hartford through purvey of the state government here to, you know, keep an eye on cities, towns, municipalities, depending upon the size and their financial standing, making sure they're going to stay solvent, what they're doing economically is okay. And a move to put Ansonia under that has caused a lot of consternation, a lot of finger pointing here. So we will get the first side of the story here from Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti. We'll get his thoughts on that. Hey, Mayor, it's Paul. Good afternoon again. How are you? How you been?
Good afternoon, Paul and everybody. How you guys doing today?
I'm good, Mayor. Great that you could make some time to have a chat with us.
I usually do these in the morning, but yeah. Here it is at the end of the day. That's okay.
Yeah. Well,
I'm awakened.
Well, that's good. that's good. So, yeah, I know you've been on with Melissa. I want to get you on here for my audience, and we'll get Kara Rochelle on in a few days, too, to talk about it. But, Mayor, explain the controversy here. And apparently this was, a last-minute thing done by the legislature here or a certain member or members of the legislature that caused some confusion. What do you say, A, to that, and B, about the allegations of the fiscal and or financial help of your city?
First of all, this is purely, purely political.
Mm-hmm.
They want me out. That's the bottom line. They want me out. And it's our state representative, Kara Rochelle. She stood on the House floor, in front of live television, no less, that $40 million from the sale of our WPCA had disappeared. That, you know, that's a serious accusation, and it's completely 100% false. You know, we sold our WPCA because there's over $15 million in repairs that need to be done. You know, and I've been in office for 12 years,
okay.
And I've never raised the taxes until this year, only because if we had to fix that ourselves, that WPCA, you were looking about a 10 to 12 mil increase in your taxes, which is estimated anywhere from $7,500 to $8,000 increase in everybody's taxes to repair that WPCA. So I told staff, I met with them, and I said, why don't we just sell it? You know, it's an albatross. Let's sell it to another entity, which was the Aquarian Water Company.
Okay.
And they took it. But what I sat with them several times, and I told them my main concern is that we do not increase taxes on the residents. What we paid in the past years, which was stable, I want to continue to be stable for a period of 7 to 10 years. And that's the way we wrote the contract. So nobody's taxes are going to go up. But she said that we misappropriated this money. It, you know, I couldn't have said it maybe 100 times to the residents of Ansonia, because she even got some of them on board. These are people that really don't know what they're talking about. They're not even taxpayers to begin with. But the money was used for future revenue. It was used for to replenish our fund balance, which in elections past, Paul, they hammered me that I used the fund balance. But now the fund balance is anywhere near close to $10 million. Just so you know, we have but she wants to put us on this oversight committee.
So
have a strong...
Mayor, hold on. A couple of things I want to get. Earlier in your conversation, you said they want you out. First, let's define who is they. Define they.
Well, it's Miss Rochelle and the other party. They want me out. I've had 12. You got to understand that I live in a town, and I'm the mayor of a town that I'm outnumbered 7-1,
mm-hmm.
and I've been here 12 years and counting, hopefully counting, because I want to rebuild the city that I was born and raised in, raise my family, raise my business here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very concerned about the future if they get in, because they've already said they plan on bringing low to income housing here. First of all, we are 12% over our quota for low to moderate income housing, mm-hmm. whereas Shelton, Derby, Seymour, Oxford, Beacon Falls are below 2%. Stop sending people here. Send them to your town. Go let them be in your town. This was a former manufacturing town.
Mm-hmm.
I got 60 acres of prime land on the west side of town that I have plans for. That's going to make this an economic engine in the valley. Jobs for everybody.
So is this then, Mayor, as you have said in other publications, I just want to focus in on that. Is it your reluctance to raise taxes that you think is behind this to a great deal?
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're foaming at the mouth that I haven't raised taxes. This year we went up 1.35
mm-hmm.
in taxes. Only because, Paul, only because they shortchanged the state and her, who represents this district, shortchanged the Board of Education. They shortchanged them. There's proof of it all. And we had no, in years past, I was able to balance the budget and not raise taxes on the backs of the taxpayers. I can't do that anymore. We're running out. That's why this economic engine over at Ansonia Copper and Brass is vital. For what my plans are there, because if it doesn't happen and I'm voted out, they're going to put a load of income housing over there, which would be a travesty.
Is the city under your tutelage, Mayor, and Mayor David Cassetti is the guest, is the city financially stable now? What about cash on hand? Are there any concerns that taxpayers and citizens might have? What can you tell them?
Well, first of all, our projected fund balance, okay, that's our rainy day fund,
mm-hmm.
is anywhere from $10 million plus for fiscal year 26,
okay.
which starts, January or July 1st of this year, okay? We have a solid. You got to remember, Ansonia was number two on the list for the most distressed community. There's 25 distressed communities in the state of Connecticut. We were number two when I took office mm-hmm. in 2013. Right now, we're 18th.
Okay,
we're going to be coming off that list in years to come because of the strong financials that we have. Okay, having a AA- bond rating.
I saw
okay,
that.
One step away from perfect at AAA. I mean, we are rock solid. I mean, we're the same as Shelton, which is one of the wealthiest towns in the area,
okay.
or in the state.
And finally, let me ask you this, because we are a bit short on time. Is this actually going to happen, or are there any efforts to...
is going to come in.
Okay.
But I believe the governor, if you listen to the governor,
yeah.
he says she did this the wrong way.
Okay.
She did not go about this the right way. She did it the wrong way. She filibustered. She took time away from other state representatives, Democrat and Republicans, to put their bills in. And some of them bills were very, very important mm-hmm. bills. But because she filibustered, she used all the time up and time expired at 12 midnight, which was unprofessional on her part. And the governor's even stated that in ink.
All right. Mayor David Cassetti, Mayor, good to have your side of the story. We'll get Kara on just to balance it out a little bit down the line. Mayor, good to have you on. You have the number. Don't be a stranger and make sure we stay in touch, okay?
Got it, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. The mayor of Ansonia, David Cassetti. And yes, we will venture a few moments with State Rep. Kara Rochelle coming up in a few days to give you both sides of controversy over the finances of the great city of Ansonia. Every Wednesday at this time, middle of the week, so the scales are balanced left and right. The fulcrum here on a Wednesday, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
You mean when I'm not on, there's conservative voices on this show?
We try to balance it out, Dan Haar. I'm Mr. Middle of the Road, not. But no, listen, it's all good fun. I enjoyed your piece, Dan, and let's talk about it for the people who might not have read it. I have recommended that they do that, throwing a little, I don't want to say cold water, Dan, but reality to some Democrats who think if Ned Lamont runs again, they've got a shot to beat him. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, one of the old expressions in politics is you can't beat someone with no one. And I'm not saying that there is no one who can mount a challenge to the governor, but there is no one who can win against the governor. There are a couple of Democrats, and I name them in the story, who might, you know, they're sort of in the rumor mill of progressive Democrats. They're well-respected, well-regarded members of the General Assembly. And, you know, yes, could they mount a challenge? Could they even qualify for CEP? It is enormously difficult. You have to raise, I forget, it's $200,000, $300,000, yeah. $100 increment. It is tremendously difficult to qualify for public financing. If you do, you get a lot of money, and it's more money this year. I forget the numbers for the primary, yeah. But I think for the general election, it's $15 million,
yeah.
$12 million.
A lot of money.
So it's real money. But first of all, Governor Ned Lamont is already the sitting governor. Second of all, and so he has the platform. Four times a day, he does something that effectively is a campaign event. And secondly, he has, obviously, as we all know, no shortage of money. He doesn't have to spend one second raising money.
Yeah.
He doesn't turn away money. People do give him a couple $1 million every cycle for some weird reason. I know the reason, but, you know, so he doesn't spend one second campaigning.
Yeah.
Third of all, he's going to spend more than you are, whoever you are. He spent 20, I believe it was $26 million last time, of which 24 was his.
Yeah.
I could be wrong a little bit on the numbers, but it's in that ballpark. And so, and fifth, sixth, and seventh of all, the most important reason that the left can't mount a winning challenge is because what is exactly the left, right? Are we talking about the environmental left, the redistribute money wealth left, the elite suburban left, the community building urban left, the education left? In other words, it's a fractured community. And so if somebody, Senator Winfield from New Haven, he's known to be a left-leaning, progressive, non-fan of Ned Lamont's, right? And he's also very much associated with prison reform and judicial reform, right? That's a big issue for him. Could he get that group against Ned Lamont? You bet your bottom dollar he could. Because there are different reasons why they aren't happy with Lamont, right? But does he also get the environmentalists on board? Does he also get the we want to redistribute wealth people that want to tax the rich? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
So, and it's no disservice or discredit to Senator Winfield. Same with my friend Josh Elliott. You know, very effective legislator.
Sure.
On the left, and he has significant backing. But does he have enough backing to coalesce the whole left? No. And then secondly, last of all, I would say the governor has the ability to he did do a lot of things. He created early childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He created a housing bill that he damn well better sign, which we're going to talk about. He created all kinds of things, right, that he can say are progressive legislation. And last of all, he can say, I'm going to win in November because I represent the voices of Plainville, Connecticut. And so for all those reasons, he's safe.
Well, you know, Dan, I mean, part of it is Senator Anwar in your publications that ran his op-ed. I mean, isn't most of the anger taxes here? I know he's getting a lot of vitriol because of the striking workers bill with the unemployment, but boy, I got to tell you, everything, at least in Dr. Anwar's column, seemed to reflect back to taxes.
Exactly. But let's take the striking workers bill, right? Does a person who gets union support also get the support of the rest of the left?
Yeah.
And the answer is, in recent history in Connecticut, we've seen that's not true. Let's just take Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas, right? She won without labor.
Yeah.
How'd she do that? She did that because the left is a big place.
Mm-hmm. It's
Labor
almost like
her opponent.
It's almost like a parliamentary left, Dan. You're right. Where you see these graphics sometimes. Well, you know, the left in a country is the Greens here and the New Democrats here and the environmentalists here and the Workers' Party here. You're right. It really is a hodgepodge. I never thought of it that way.
I didn't even mention the new urbanists, right? The bicycle left. Right? Does the bicycle left support? I don't know. You know.
You better, Dan. You better put a trademark on that. I love that. The bicycle left. That's very good.
I'm in the bicycle left. I just got a free helmet from
nice.
Bike West Hartford, and I donated money that was worth more than the helmet. See, I'm in the bicycle left.
Excellent. So, all right, let's talk about that housing bill. And a rather contentious last paragraph in a statement today by Messrs. Looney and Duff here. What do you make of this whole thing, and Dan? And does he veto it and then say, okay, make changes here because I wasn't happy? So what are you hearing here?
A couple of things. Let me start by saying that the bill is neither as bad as the people you're talking with on the air are saying. It is absolutely none of that stuff, nor is it as good as the people who support it are saying. It's just a mediocre. It's a pretty good bill. It's not, you know, I described it, and I think a lot of people described it as a good start, right? So let's stop with the extremes on both sides, first of all. Second of all, what is happening politically is simply extraordinary, and it reflects the governor's inability to manage this thing politically, right? Mm-hmm. Because the governor needed to walk away from those negotiations in which he was a part, as the press release from the senators today says, you were here in the room. Why are we finding out now that you're not okay with the numbers? So it was poorly managed politically by the governor. He walked away from negotiations with a handshake. He caused legislators such as CeCe Mayer to vote for a bill these are not people in safe seats, mm-hmm. and the Democrats in non-safe seats who voted for a bill putting their butts on the line, mm-hmm. and then for him to turn around and veto it hangs them out to dry, right? And she's not the only one. There are others, right? So you can't do that politically, right? So he's put himself in an impossible situation, right? Right now, no matter what happens, some big group is really mad.
Yeah.
Right? You don't get this. And by the way, it's not just the top two senators. I spoke to Jason Rojas, mm-hmm. the majority leader of the House. And this is his bill more than anybody else's bill.
He's mad at me. He doesn't like me. He's mad at me, you know.
Well, he may like you or not, but he's made it clear that a veto would be a big, big deal.
Wow.
This is not just another veto. And no, they do not have the votes to override a veto. So it's not, there isn't a veto threat because an override threat because they don't have the votes to override a veto. I don't know. I don't remember how many votes it got in the House or the Senate. But they don't. They probably can't override a veto.
The Senate was 20-15 with one no vote. Norm Needleman did not vote for some reason. The House, I don't remember. House, I think, Dan, 84-67. I think.
Yeah. The point is that these are not override numbers.
Yeah.
Right. And there are Democrats and the Republicans today. To get to your next question, the Democrats, the big piece of news in the Looney Duff. Press release is that we have negotiations going on, right? Well, this is extraordinary, right? And I get it that for those of us that are in the thing, it's a big deal, right? And for the average person in Plainville, it's not a big deal that they're negotiating a bill.
Plainville again. Yes, right, go ahead.
right. It's Plainville is our Peoria, right? But I promise you, dear listener of WICC, when a bill is already passed, and is on the governor's desk, and he is figuring out whether to veto it or sign it, and it is not a budget bill where he has a line item veto, and they re-entered negotiations on this bill, trust me, dear listener, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Someone really screwed up when that happens, right? And so the fact that there even might be negotiations, and apparently there are negotiations, right? And, of course, the governor in his statement 2 days ago said, we are going to look at ways to he basically said, I'm going to sign it, but we want to amend it, right, in a special session. So the negotiations right now are, what does that amendment look like? And the Republicans are apoplectic about this, rightly. And they're saying even your own people are against this. Are you going to hang them out to dry?
Yeah.
So the governor has created a no-win situation for himself.
Excellent stuff. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, the red meat is out there. Continued good luck. And we will talk to you next week. Thank you.
I do want to say it's a good bill and you should sign it. And it's nonsense that it takes away state. But the story here is political, not policy.
Absolutely.
But I do think it's a good bill that he should sign. It doesn't take away town authority and rights. It creates some non-binding numbers.
Now I'm going to get all the angry text messages and emails, which you probably don't care, but I'll let you know, okay?
Yeah, send them to me. Forward them to me. Put them in a box.
All right, Dan, thanks. Take care, man. Well, the Senate Democratic leadership here issuing a statement earlier today regarding the fate of House Bill 5002, which a lot of people did not like. I'm still trying to figure out who exactly likes this. I mean, like I said, and, you know, you had a high-ranking member of the General Assembly get upset with Melissa because I said something when I say this is squarely aimed at Fairfield County. So the governor, being the adult in the room, says, okay, we're going to try and figure this out. But we get this from Bob Duff in Norwalk and Martin Looney, quote, "No matter how loud the anger lies and irrational voices get, we must remain steadfast in our mission to build more housing, lower costs, and grow the economy." Okay. You could have said we must remain steadfast in our mission, blah, blah, blah. But they had to mention anger lies in irrational voices. Maria Weingarten's here joining us, ct169strong.org. Maria, I hope they don't consider you an irrational voice. Do you consider yourself an irrational voice?
Not at all. I was like, wow, great timing to bring me up right after that comment.
Oh, my God. You know, Maria, I've always said this. Good political debate is essential. The arrogance bothers me here. I don't know about you. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I read that and I just went, wow, wow.
Yeah, I think we were all shocked to read that as well. I find it very disappointing. And again, I'm not sure who they're speaking to because I've reached out to some members of the minority party and they haven't heard boo. So this is more of the same where they've done this as the majority. They've done it behind closed doors. And yet again, they're saying they're doing whatever they're doing on their own. And no one else is part of that process.
What is your level of faith, yes or no, up or down here from Maria, where the governor has said over the past few days, he started to kind of hint at this last week, saying, hey, he thought there were some parts of this that are good, and then there were parts he did not like at all. He's threatening a veto, and he wants a rewrite here. What's your gut feeling on this?
It's hard to tell. And honestly, we're not sure who he's hearing from and what he's hearing. So, you know, we encouraged him to read the bill. You know, some of the comments he made indicated that maybe he was talking about the opt-in parts, mm-hmm. but he didn't talk about the other parts. So that's the concern we have, is that he's not maybe getting the full picture here. And we hope that there are those people who are able to speak with him. We've reached out and asked for a meeting, but have not heard back. And we would be happy to bring some of those other things that have been raised to us. We are not the experts, but we do speak with, you know, CCM and COST and all of them. I know they've reached out. Mm-hmm. And I know CCM just issued a letter again today,
yep.
asking the governor to veto the bill. So the only thing I will say is I would agree that this bill is not, it is squarely on pushing things to happen in Fairfield County,
mm-hmm.
where I would argue that things have already been happening. But if you look at the fair share number allocations, the top 26 municipalities that are getting the largest allocation as a percentage of their housing stock, 19 of the 26 are not in Fairfield County.
Yeah.
That's my point. Places like Bridgewater, Bethany, Andover, yeah. Sherman, you know, there are plenty of municipalities that are getting hit hard.
Mm.
The other part that hasn't really been talked about is that what's being required with the parking mandates, the as of right development, these are all things that local towns, small towns I worry about the most in this respect is that you're going to have to rewrite all of your regs, your it's sort of a zone, it's a form-based code,
yeah.
Meaning you have to have very detailed regs to sort of hypotheticals of every situation because you are eliminating any planning and zoning. You know, any of your local volunteers that work on your zoning commissions, they're totally shut out of the process.
Yeah, and Maria, finally, because I do have to run here, I do appreciate the call. Some of these numbers, though, I did see hundreds of units, the allocation for places like Greenwich and other parts of Fairfield County, and these other cities and towns. I mean, where? I numbers, and I think even the governor alluded to this, like you come up with these numbers, but where do you put not even dozens, but hundreds of these anticipated, for example, in Greenwich or lower Fairfield County units? And what? And I know there's a formula for it, but, you know, where do you put them? How many do you do this? And how affordable is affordable to some people?
Right. Well, the tough part in this is that actually, if you read the Fair Share study, it says that it has to be for the deepest affordable. So people who make $0 to 30% of median income. So people who are making roughly under $35,000.
Oh.
So what developer
yeah.
is going to build a unit where they can make no money on it? So that's the danger here as well, is that when 84% of the units, the fair shares that they're allocating to everybody have to be at that deep affordable, no one's building it. And so then it's another opportunity to say, shame on you. You haven't built what we told you to build. You know, we only told you to build the fair shares, but if no one's going to build them if the economics don't work. That's been the problem with 830G in a lot of the state as well.
Absolutely. Maria, thank you for calling in. Maria Weingarten talking about the housing bill. She, of course, of CT169strong.org. Maria, thank you, and I'm sure we'll chat on this down the road. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate Bye. It.